This is Free Talk Live, and you're invited to join us right here. Our toll-free number is 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. You can also Skype into the show at Skype username lrn.fm. Joining you in the studio tonight, it's me, Ian.
Jay.
And Mark.
Of course, you can join us online anytime you want. Just go to freetalklive.com and enjoy the features on the site. They're all completely free. In fact, you can create the content that you see there on the front page at freetalklive.com as we jump into some international news that has been brewing now. Well, you could say it's been brewing for years, but certainly it has been explicitly brewing over the last week or two in Venezuela, where massive protests have hit the streets. I mean, they've been in the streets for the last few weeks there anyway, protesting the president, Nicolas Maduro. But today was expected to be a particularly large protest. And indeed it was. Apparently even two people were shot dead during these protests as opponents of President Nicolas Maduro flooded the streets of Caracas and other Venezuelan cities on Wednesday, that's today, battling security forces in what's been dubbed the, quote, mother of all marches, unquote. Is this a new thing? First there's the mother of all bombs?
I guess.
That's not like the real term for the bomb, is it?
I believe that the name of the bomb actually is Moab.
But it is.
Mother of all bombs is a nickname for it. I'd have to look it up.
Oh, it stands for something else, you think?
I believe so.
So anyway, they are marching against the embattled socialist leader, Carlos Romero. This, again, according to the AP, was just 3 days away from his 18th birthday, was walking to play soccer with his friends when he bumped into pro-government militias stalking a pocket of protesters. Family spokesperson Melvin Soho told the Associated Press, based on the accounts of two people who rushed Romero to the hospital after he was hit by gunfire, Soho said, quote, "This was supposed to be a happy moment, but instead I came home to see my brother die." He had returned from Ecuador, where he had been living for the past year. There was no immediate confirmation that the militias were the ones who shot the boy, and some government officials cast doubt on the account, saying Romero was killed in an attempted assault. In the western city of San Cristobal, a 23-year-old woman identified as Paola Ramirez was shot dead by similar groups, according to the mayor, who said the group circled demonstrators on motorcycles as they were heading home from the demonstration. The two killings bring to 7 the death toll since protests began 3 weeks ago over the Supreme Court's decision to strip the opposition-controlled Congress of its last remaining powers, a move that was later reversed, but not before enraging the opposition and causing a storm of international criticism. The charges of increasing government authoritarianism come against the backdrop of an ever-deepening economic crisis, which we've talked a lot about here on Free Talk Live over the last several years. It's the current, you know, the crown jewel of socialism that you can look at and see just exactly how bad things can really get. And tragically, there are real human lives that are caught in the balance.
Lots of them.
Yep. And they would very much love to displace this President Maduro, but he, like a lot of people who are in his situation where, you know, they're teetering on the precipice of complete disaster, or you could argue that they already have fallen over the cliff. But, you know, these people tend to cling on to their power for as long as they possibly can, till whatever the bitter end is.
What little power is left in Venezuela, literally, you know, these government authorities literally have all of it, because the people are literally in survival mode now. They can't, mm-hmm. you know, really obtain anything. They have to just survive.
Food is very hard to get
every day. And, you know, and then those in the government, because they've literally are, you know, the parasites have been siphoning everything for years. You know, they're probably all set for a while still. Even though I know there was a news story that some people in the military or something were, you know, slaughtering a goat or something.
Yeah, that was several months ago.
I know plenty of, you know, I don't know where the goat came from. I mean, I sell goats to people sometimes, you know, mm-hmm. they have, you know, goat barbecues or whatever. But I often talk to people about socialism almost every day. I get into some conversation to where I bring up really the only difference between Venezuela and the United States is the fact that the United States has a printing press is a dollar that is honored by the rest of the world through the force of threats and violence. I mean, it's, you know, pretty much the reason for every war is to make sure these countries keep on taking a dollar, you know, accepting a dollar. But as soon as the rest of the world views the U.S. dollar the way they view the Bolivar, You know, the United States, if they weren't careful, could be, you know, well, hopefully we won't get into that position. But I mean, you know, there's really not much difference. We're still kind of a socialist nation here in the U.S. with all these socialist programs. And the only reason they work is because they can print money. And Venezuela can't.
They cannot. Yeah.
Well, yeah, they actually have to farm it out.
Hire someone.
And they can't even get that done because they can't pay for the ink.
Right, because the printer is not going to accept the very thing that they are printing as payment. They're going to accept other world currencies as payment, but not the stuff that they're printing out. And the government there does not have enough of another world currency to order more currency being printed. It's a pretty crazy situation. And right now, people are in the streets in Caracas. Tens of thousands of angry protesters converge from 26 different points around the capital to march downtown to the ombudsman's office. Like a half a dozen times previously, their progress was blocked by a curtain of tear gas and rubber bullets fired by riot police officers. Now, there have been some big protests in the United States over the years, but never really a protest of hungry people.
Now, hungry people tend to change their governments.
Yeah. Most of the people in the United States at a protest, they're probably eating pretty well. They just stopped off at the Starbucks, grabbed themselves a, you know, tall or a venti latte and, you know, mosey on down to the location of where they're going to have the protest. They'll listen to some speakers. They'll chant some chants. And they'll go home and call it a day.
Yep. Pat themselves on the back. If they're liberals, they're liable to try to get arrested.
Not always.
I'm thinking if the Venezuelan people were armed like the American people are, it probably never would have gotten to the point it's at now. But at least, you know, if you had hungry armed people, I don't think armed people really even go hungry or go too hungry anyways, but it'd be a different story down there if that population was armed.
Oh, yeah. Well, some of them are armed. The ones who are siding with the government are being given guns. And we'll get to that part of the story here in a moment. As night fell, a few thousand people were still gathered in a plaza in wealthy eastern Caracas as residents in nearby buildings banged pots and pans in a show of support. A group of youths with their faces covered tore down street signs and billboards for makeshift barricades. They then launched rocks and Molotov cocktails against lines of police and National Guardsmen who responded with tear gas in cat-and-mouse skirmishes, likely to last deep into the night. At one point, dozens of protesters amassed on a highway. They fled a cloud of eye-searing tear gas by sliding down a long concrete causeway into the Guare River that traverses Caracas. The Supreme Court's decision has energized Venezuela's fractious opposition, which had been struggling to channel growing disgust with President Maduro over widespread food shortages, triple-digit inflation, and rampant crime, which, of course, makes me want to go and check DolarToday.com, which is one of our favorite websites here to get an update on exactly what the Bolivar, or the so-called Bolivar Fuerte, the strong Bolivar, what it's worth right now on the black market in Venezuela. It's about 4,600 Bolivar to one U.S. dollar. Now, remember, the official exchange rate is 10 to 1. So the real exchange rate in the black market is quite different from what the reality is.
That's been skyrocketing because a few months ago, wasn't it like
2,400?
Yeah, so I was going to say 2,000 or something when I looked at it.
Yep. And it's not going to get better.
No. It's basically toilet paper or wallpaper. It'd probably be cheap wallpaper for Americans if you wanted, you know, pretty wallpaper. But, I mean, they got to be using some other currency, you know, there locally, I would imagine.
Yeah,
I mean,
the dollar.
The dollar, Bitcoin, you know, something.
Bitcoin is legal, as I understand it, to use. You can legally use it in Venezuela. Yep. It's just that mining it is something that the secret police are trying to catch you for.
Right, because of the subsidized electricity.
Exactly. So, with its momentum renewed, the opposition is now pushing for Maduro's removal and the release of scores of political prisoners. The government last year abruptly postponed regional elections. The opposition was heavily favored to win and cut off a petition drive to force a referendum seeking Maduro's removal before elections late last year. So what about these militias, these people that are doing the killing, allegedly, in the streets, these government-supporting militias who are doing some of the dirty work, apparently, for Maduro? Apparently, Maduro's given them guns. And we'll tell you about that coming up here in moments. 855-450-FREE. So if you want a gun, you just have to be on his side. It's Free Talk Live. Yeah! Talk Live. Dial toll free. Join us right here. Our number 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. We're talking about the massive protests in the streets in Venezuela today that they've been building for the last few weeks. But today was supposed to be a particularly special day for people to get out there. And tens of thousands were in Caracas alone. Other protests elsewhere throughout the country. People obviously upset. They're having a tough time finding food. The exchange rate has been just ruined, just destroyed partially the economy there in Venezuela. And the government, of course, has nationalized industries, which has destroyed them. They're running them into the ground, basically. It's just a crazy situation. And you know, the people are rightfully upset about it. We'll continue. You can share your thoughts. Our toll-free number is 855-450-FREE. Want to let you know about MyPillow, MyPillow.com, code FTL. This is a great pillow. I use it every night. Mark, you've got one as well. Your wife has one.
Yes.
And
my in-laws have one. I believe great. My mother has one.
Did they all get them after you got yours, or did they already have them? Because our co-host Thursday Nights on Chris has had one for years. He loves it. Anyway, it's a great product, and you can try it for yourself with half off by going to MyPillow.com using code FTL, like Free Talk Live. That's MyPillow.com with code FTL. And if you want two, you can get two for the price of one, so it's up to you. And if you don't like it for some reason, because, again, there's a chance you might not. We love it, though. If you don't like it, you can send it back. They back it with a 60-day money-back guarantee. And if you do like it, then feel good because there's a 10-year warranty on the product as well. It's designed to fit to the shape of your body and hold your neck in the proper position. It's washable. It's dryable. It's really an amazing product. Go check it out at MyPillow.com. Use code FTL for the discount. Let's go to the phones, your calls and thoughts. More about Venezuela coming up here. Plus, who's the real Alex Jones? He's in the news. We've got Jarls on the line in Los Angeles. You're on Free Talk Live. Hello, Jarls.
Hello, gentlemen.
Hey.
I'm wondering, do you all believe in this, there is no gravity?
Do I believe that there's no gravity?
That's ridiculous.
I think that it's probably one of, as I understand it, it's one of the sort of scientific theories they're having the most trouble sort of proving that it is reality. But
For 600 years.
I've fallen off many horses. I believe in gravity.
Yeah. Yep. I mean, like.
Well, now, do you think maybe because you're heavier than the air underneath you, so you will fall until the earth can support you?
Right, and the explanation for that is cause gravity.
But what is cause gravity? Because
this isn't a show about physics, so I'm not going to be able to explain gravity to you. I'm not a physics expert. I'm just a talk show host. But there have been a lot of people for a long time that have held this particular theory, and it is just a theory, right? The idea is that the more massive, my basic understanding, my layman's understanding of it, is that the more massive an object is, the larger its field of gravitational pull. And so therefore, the massive object underneath us, which is the Earth, would have this large pull that is pulling people down on it. They certainly have been on places like the moon where the gravitational pull is not as large.
No, they haven't been to the moon.
Okay, well, now you're getting into another conspiracy theory. Okay, so...
Well, no, it's actually a legitimate theory that people have been wondering since it happened.
When you say it's legitimate, what do you mean by that?
Oh, it's a serious subject that's been questioned. It's not some crack pottery.
Oh, it's definitely pretty crackpot.
Well, I mean, it's been asked. As my understanding, they put some kind of mirror up there on the moon, and they can bounce a laser off of it. Isn't that proof enough they've been there?
Oh, I've heard this, but I'm wondering with the movement of the moon and the Earth and the time the laser.
We know people who've used the mirror, okay? One of our co-hosts has used the mirror.
Oh, they have?
Yeah.
Now, did they account for the refraction and plus?
I don't know. Why don't you call Thursday night and talk to them? Thanks for the call tonight. Toll-free number here, 855-450-FREE. I mean, it's just so ridiculous. Anybody that wants to go and look up the the moon landing conspiracy theory, there's a bunch of pictures that claim that this is evidence that it wasn't real. But then if you want, you can go and look up the counter argument against those pictures and watch as they're decimated. They're just completely wiped out. There's all kinds of, you can just go as deep into this world as you want to, and it's a crazy world, and nobody takes it seriously. No
one. Burn a lot of time doing it, too, and a lot of people do to get stuck in these rabbit holes.
Right.
Rabbit holes. And
I get conspiracy theories sort of surrounding things that affect us. But whether or not man went to the moon is sort of irrelevant to my life. Mm-hmm. You know, like the idea behind it, my guess is that somehow the United States had the intention of breaking the Soviet Union financially by pretending that they went to the moon. Okay, fine. You know, the same way as they did with Star Wars, you know, the fake program in the 80s. Okay, fine. So the United States didn't go to the moon. And what?
Yeah.
I don't know what to do about it. And the world's flat. So what? How does my life change?
I don't know, Mark. I think it's just that what you've speculated before. It's just these people want to feel like they know something you don't, or they know some sort of secret that most of the world does not. And so, therefore, they're on the inside track. They're on the in club, the in crowd of all the, you know, whatever 0.01% of the population that believes this claptrap. Now, there are some real conspiracies out there, but don't count me as a believer of these.
If it don't get me more freedom, I really don't care.
Indeed. Our toll-free number is 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. So what really matters? Well, you know, things that you can see happening in real life, like the protests in the streets of Venezuela, where there were tens of thousands of people in Caracas today. There have been protests going on there for weeks, ever since the government decided to strip the legislature of what remained of its lawmaking ability, of its powers. That was reversed after a huge outcry, and people took to the streets, with today being a major culmination in some of those protests. Two people were shot to death in the streets, ostensibly by pro-government militias who've been armed up, as the story will tell us here from the Associated Press. With its momentum renewed, the opposition is now pushing for the president, that's Nicolas Maduro's, removal from office, along with the release of scores of political prisoners. Last year, the government postponed their elections regionally.
I wonder how the prisoners are eating.
That's a good question.
Probably not well.
Maduro, addressing supporters at a large counter march, seemed open to some sort of electoral showdown. He said that he was anxious to see elections take place sometime, quote, soon, and repeated his call for dialogue, saying he had a proposal that he wanted to make to the opposition. He said, quote, today they attempted to take power by force, and we defeated them again, unquote.
You know, talk like that is going to get you ousted.
Opposition marchers included Liliana Machuca, who earns about $20 a month, holding two jobs teaching literature. Although she doesn't expect change overnight, she said protesting is the only option that the opposition has after what she says are scores of abuses committed by the government.
I think there's more options. Ben Stone's book, Subversion, Sabotage, and Sedition. Might not have said that right, but I've been listening to it on audio. That would be great for the Venezuelan people, I think.
Let's talk more about that if you've got some more specific ideas.
Yeah.
I'm interested in what you have to say. Our toll-free number here is 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. And, of course, you can bring up anything that's on your mind. This is Free Talk Live.
North to Port is a liberty-inspired fiction podcast about a band on tour. Each episode chronicles the band's adventures in the form of a radio interview at a tour stop location. Listen as North to Port explores liberty themes in friendly ways, with humor and music. To listen to the podcast and the accompanying album, please visit northtoport.com. That's NORTHTOPORT.com. Or just search North to Port in your favorite podcatcher.
Talk Live. Dial on in toll free and join us here on the radio. Our number 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. You can bring up what you want. With you in the studio tonight, you've got Ian,
Jay,
and Mark.
Also, I do want to let you know how to save big time on your purchases at Amazon. What you do is you go to saveatpurse.com. That's saveatpurse.com. And that's where you can learn how Purse works. It works really well, actually. It's real easy. You just add stuff to your Amazon wish list. You import that wish list in over at saveitpurse.com. And then you select your discount. You want to save 10%? You can do that pretty easy. You want to save 20%? That's actually really easy, too. You want to say more than 20%? You might have to be waiting for a little while, because the higher the percentage you put up there, the longer it generally tends to take. But usually 15-20%, you can get off of your purchase within like 24 hours, and it's amazing. You know, it sounds too good to be true. This is one of the few times when it really is as good as it sounds. Go to saveitpurse.com. I do it all the time. I've done it more than 80 times in the last 2 years and have saved over $1,700 off of stuff I was going to buy anyway. So it's a no-brainer. The only catch is you have to use cryptocurrency like Bitcoin in order to get these amazing savings. So once again, it's saveatpurse, saveitpurse.com. Let's go to your phone calls and thoughts. More about the conflict ongoing in Venezuela. Coming up first, Don is in Oregon listening to KGOE in Eureka. Hey, Don.
Hey, that goofball that called about no gravity?
Yes, sir.
He had a point. There was a book by Mark Halperin called A Soldier of the Great War. Fascinating book. I'm pretty sure he was Bob Dole's speechwriter. And the point they brought up was that there's push and lack of push. We have plenty of evidence of that, radiation and what have you. But without a physical attachment, you can't have pull. They're looking in the wrong direction.
Okay. So you're saying you are one of the people who does not believe in gravity, is what you're saying.
Well, I'm saying we should be able to understand it by now. And this is a more credible concept, that the bulk of the planet would block the background radiation, whatever, in space from pushing from the other side. You're being pushed from this side. We have no evidence of pull without a physical attachment, but you can understand push. There's only push and lack of push. And that was a point they made, and I'll just leave it at that.
Well, I think it's, whether gravity exists or not is not something that I, as a talk show host, can prove. I am a jack of all trades, right? Like, I know a little bit.
That's great.
About a
lot
of things.
I don't need you to prove it.
What's that?
I'm just filling airspace for you, okay?
Oh, I appreciate it.
Thanks for taking
the call.
And you know, when it comes down to it, honestly, I can't one way or the other. If you want to get in a conversation about gravity when you've done your studying, I'm not going to be able to stand up and say, hey, you know, gravity's true, because for one, the scientists haven't been able to nail down a really solid theory for gravity. They're really close. I mean, you know, they're within many, many decimal places, but they're not quite there exactly right. And, you know, maybe you've got a better idea, but I don't know what to do about it. I can't address it.
Let's talk to Brian in Texas, listening on the radio somewhere. Brian, where are you at in Texas tonight? Hello? Brian in Texas? Hello?
Yeah, if you can hear it.
Yes.
Can you hear me?
We have you.
Yeah,
now.
Great, great. All right, fantastic. I'm in northeast Texas, but I spend most of my time in Austin.
Okay.
I actually wanted to call in on the same topic, which is everybody seems to be interested in now, which is gravity. So I'm an aerospace engineer.
Okay.
My expertise is orbital mechanics, so I can explain the whole gravity thing in about 30 seconds.
Can great. You explain it in a way that is understandable to a non-physician?
Yes. It's actually
physicist.
Pretty straightforward. Yeah. So the trick with gravity is, there's an equation for gravity. So all scientific method starts with observation. You look at something, you try to explain it. You try to explain it mathematically to prove it. Now, what we discovered about gravity is you can observe it, you can measure it, but you can't understand all of why it exists. That's the controversy. So, you know, it's sort of in a nutshell, the equation for gravity is G, which is called this universal gravitational constant. And it's, you take G, you multiply it times two different masses that are attracting one another, and you divide it by the distance of them squared. The problem is, while we can measure it, we can show that it exists, we can't prove why G is this magical constant number. So even though it exists and has existed forever, we don't know why.
So isn't Earth 1G?
It's explained as capital G.
Okay.
If you ever looked it up, it's just a capital G, and it's called the universal gravitational constant.
But how much is Earth's gravity compared to this universal gravitational constant?
Well, so capital G is a multiplier that you multiply times the attraction of two masses. So like in the case of the Earth, when you get gravitational acceleration, it's like 9.81 meters per second squared. That's G times the mass of the Earth times your mass or the mass of the thing being measured, which, given the mass of the Earth and the distance between those two objects, is fairly constant. It's the same reason why, like, if you're high up in the mountains and your baking directions have to change a little bit, it's because that distance between your mass, the mass of the thing you're dealing with, and the core of the Earth is slightly elongated. So it makes a difference. It makes a small difference in how temperature and pressure and lots of things react.
Well, there's less pressure because I was in Colorado, and like when you boil water, I make bulletproof coffee, and I noticed when I came back home, it took a long time for the water to boil because it boils at 212 roughly here in, you know, 400 foot elevation. And at 5,200 foot elevation, it boils at like 190 something. And that has to do with pressure, because I know if you put water, I used to run my truck on vegetable oil, and I would bring the vegetable oil, put it in a vacuum and warm it up, because I could boil the water out of the vegetable oil at 70 degrees Fahrenheit. The water would boil at 27 inches of vacuum, which was a lot cheaper than heating the oil up to 212 degrees. Hmm. You just vacuum it, and I could, you know, I can get my water to like 150. And so because of lower pressure, water boils sooner.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. And so you get those sort of differences. And so the big problem is you have this thing, again, in this case called capital G, which affects lots of things. Gravity affects lots of deals. We don't know why it is the number that it is. And actually, I'll be honest with you, it's been a while since I've looked specifically at the number, so I can't remember it, but it's called exactly what the value is, but it's a constant. And so the issue or the controversy over anything about gravity is that, you know, well, why is that number there? Why can't we, it can't become, it's a theory of gravity. It can't really become the law of gravity until you can prove exactly why. And that really probably occurs more on the quantum level. And really that's it. I promise you gravity exists.
So anybody this is like that, the reason why it would be best.
Oh, I was pretty sure.
Right. So the reason why it would be best explained as that's just one of the rules of this universe, right? Like those are,
right.
It's a constant because it got set that way somehow.
Right.
You know, whether it was God or
you can
programmers.
Measure between a potato and a potato, or between two planets or the moon and a rocket ship, or the moon and us, or and no matter how you measure it, no matter how you do the calculation, that constant G is always the same, but we don't know why.
Brian, thank you for bringing some sanity to this discussion and some smarts. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for being an engineer and listening to this. Still listening to this show.
Thanks, dude. Have a great night.
Thanks very much.
It's Brian in Texas. You can join us here, 855-450-FREE, or Skype in at Skype username lrn.fm. Liberty Lover on the line in Ohio. Go ahead.
I've learned about what was happening in Venezuela today, and to my understanding, they're marching for democracy, apparently.
Well, the word democracy is used over and over again to mean a whole variety of different things that it just doesn't mean. But, yeah, democracy is sort of a buzzword for human rights.
Well, in this case, I think they would like to have an election. That's something they'd like to see because the government has postponed that, which is an unusual tactic, right? If the United States government were to just indefinitely postpone the national elections, that might get some people on edge.
They're postponing elections for their leadership.
They have done they've postponed the regional elections from 2016, and Nicolas Maduro, the president, is saying that he's hoping that the elections will be had soon.
Oh yeah, I bet he's biting, chomping at the bit for that.
So stand by, Liberty Lover. If you want to comment, you're welcome to. Our toll free number here is 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. And I do have more. From the scene down in Venezuela, where thousands of people, tens of thousands, are in the streets in Caracas and in other cities around the country. 855-450-FREE. You can join us on Free Talk Live. It's Free Talk Live. Dial on in toll-free. Join us on the radio waves here. Our number, 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733, and Skype in at username lrn.fm. Hey, if you want to help out Free Talk Live, one of the best ways to do it is by shopping with us. You go to shop.freetalklive.com, enter Amazon through the links you'll find there. There's Amazon US, UK, and Amazon Canada. You just go in and get your shopping taken care of, and Free Talk Live gets a portion of the purchase price. You get the same great deals and selection that you're used to. It's just that you're entering through our affiliate link, so they send us a portion of the purchase. So you go to shop.freetalklive.com to do that. With you in the studio tonight, it's Ian.
Jay.
And Mark.
Back to Liberty Lover in Ohio on Skype. You were calling about the protests in Venezuela, you had said that you believe they were protesting for democracy?
Yes, that's what I had heard.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's a fairly common buzzword around the world, and a lot of people who believe that they're subject to a dictator would probably support democracy as a step in the right direction. We, as libertarians, probably most of us understand that democracy is really just two wolves and a sheep. Yeah, it's two wolves and a sheep deciding on dinner. I mean, somebody's going to get screwed in that situation, and it, you know, supposedly that rights can be involved, but it doesn't usually work out that well, you know, the rights of the minority.
Well, if I were in Venezuela right now, I'd be pretty pissed off myself. I mean, think about it. These people are starving right now, you know?
Some of them.
A good chunk of them. I mean, that was a big story a couple of months ago, how they're doing terribly right now. They have the highest inflation rate in the entire world right now. And when a lot of people around me try to point out these socialist utopias, I say, hey, have a look at what's happening to Venezuela right now. They're in terrible shape right now.
Yeah, well, then they'll just say, well, they did it wrong. They did socialism wrong. If you put this other socialist in charge, like Bernie, then it'll be done perfectly and everyone will live happily ever after.
And it will work as long as there is a printing press and the respect of the dollar. But the problem with America's socialism is people around the world in countries that that don't want to participate in the dollar, they get bombed. The reason all these wars are happening is to literally keep the dollar strong, and that's how the only reason the socialist programs in this country work, and I consider all parasite government jobs as part of the socialist program. I don't care if you work for the dog catcher or if you work, you know, for the federal government, that I consider, you know, that socialism also. And Venezuela don't have a printing press.
Well,
bottom line.
What I want to know is, why can't marches like this happen against our own leadership here in the States?
People are not hungry.
They are not hungry.
As long as they have everything. Oh, but as long as they have what they want, it's all okay. But if other people aren't getting what they want, you know, who cares?
There is some protest that does happen here in the States, but
it's weak.
It is very weak. It's a small percentage. Most people are mentally stimulated by the media and the TV and the entertainment.
The bread and circuses, called.
You get all sports ball. And,
right. People get distracted by, you know, these things that are out there. But for those that aren't distracted, they end up getting co-opted. So if you look back over the last decade, you can look at probably the two most noteworthy protests, sort of long-running ones, were the Tea Party, of course, and then Occupy, which also happened. And it's been several years since those things were really going. Occupy was like 2011, I think.
Occupy is what my buddy in Denver called it.
What do you call it?
Occupy.
Occupy.
It was a an operative that was running the Denver Occupy movement.
A government operative?
Government operative. And these guys, they run We Are Change Colorado now. And
the government does?
No. These guys that figured this out, who this lady was that was like in charge of it. And she was basically acting kind of like, you know, a liberal hippie. And she was basically did some research on her and found out that she was working for the CIA.
Oh boy.
And so they called her out on it and they
shut
it all
down. How does one find that out?
I'm not exactly sure how they went.
Yeah, that's got to be tough to pull that off.
Well, but I went to these We Are Change Colorado meetings a lot when I was out there. And they explained the whole thing. And Winston Smith is what he calls himself on Facebook. My buddy Bruce there. He literally, you know, showed us some videos and he called her out as an operative. And he would do these mic drop things with the bullhorn and take over the conversation saying, you know, it's the Federal Reserve. And, you know, he would get into all the, you know, the banker and the money part of it instead of just blaming corporations, because that's kind of what the whole Occupy movement was about, blaming capitalism. And he would go to these things and turn it around. And
It was interesting to see what happened here in New Hampshire, where a good chunk of the Occupy movement were libertarians, and watch sort of the interactions between them ended up being there was a schism in Occupy New Hampshire where the anti-corporate, you know, crowd went their own separate direction and then ironically created a corporation for themselves, which was really crazy.
Well, I think another one of the reasons stuff like this doesn't happen, and you brought up Occupy. Well, anything that goes against the elites, I really don't think anybody cares about, so long as it's not government for the most part. But I guess it's just the way that a lot of protesters are treated in the United States. You know, authority doesn't really seem to like protesters. They tend to get pepper sprayed all the time and sometimes even get threats. A couple years ago here, there was going to be an open carry protest, but the local police department in Youngstown found actually called the people organizing it and threatened them.
And they backed down?
Yes.
Wow, that's weak.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, that's why we need to get the people with courage to move to the same place. Thank you for the call tonight, Liberty Lover. The people who love liberty and who are actually willing to stand up against the state, who are willing to take a little bit of risk in order to achieve more liberty in our lifetime, you got to get those people together, because if the leaders of your protest movement are going to call it quits because they received a threatening phone call from the police department, that's embarrassing.
Here's how you know you're not free in this country. You need a permit to protest the government.
Well, you don't. You've got the First Amendment, and you can just go out and hit the streets.
Right. I'm not saying that that you should.
There's a bunch of cowardly protest organizers who go and beg for permission
to
protest.
You can get a permit. I mean, I don't care one way or the other whether you get a permit or not.
I think you're starting off on the wrong foot if you do.
If the lack of a permit stops you from going,
yeah,
then that's when you know you're not dedicated.
I think you're starting off on the wrong foot by going and begging for permission to protest. You are automatically assuming that you do not have a right, because if you ask permission, you are asking for a privilege. And so you might as well just forget about your protest from the word go, because they're going to likely say no. And if they don't say no, then they're likely going to give you provisions with which you would have to, you know, agree in order to have that to have the permit.
Then you're under contract to adhere to them provisions.
You have failed from the beginning if you ask for permission to protest. If you believe you have a right, then you have to act like you believe it. You have to go out there and just exercise that right. And I believe that you do have a right to protest. And, you know, it's still there in that pesky Constitution in the First Amendment that you do have a right to freedom of speech and the right to assembly. And those are all things you have a right to on public property. So do it. Do it peaceably. You know, don't destroy property in the midst of your protest. Then you look bad. You look like the, you know, bad anarchist types that have been at these various different protests around. You don't want to look like them.
Well, I'm going to go peacefully protest and do a little civil disobedience tomorrow afternoon.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And
in Concord, New Hampshire?
Concord. Actually, I think I might engage in some little peaceful protest twice, because they're going to do the 420 event at the State House.
Yep, at 420.
At 420. And, you know, if people got some salad to smoke, they're going to smoke it. And then at 10 o'clock, there is a checkpoint thing that's going on in Manchester also.
That's right, a DUI checkpoint.
That's right. So we're going
to
go.
Which I would like to attend, because Thursday's my one night off the week per week from Free Talk Live. And
to a protest.
Yeah, that's what I do, Mark. I'm an activist.
I know.
You know, I've played plenty of video games and sat around and watched plenty of TV over my life. It's more interesting to get out there and actually try to make a difference in people's lives.
It'll be real interesting to see how many people show up at the State House and how many people show up at the DUI checkpoint to protest it.
Yeah, and protest isn't, I don't know if it's the best word for it, because in a, you know, your typical protest has really no impact beyond the possibility of meeting and networking with the people at the protest. But if you're at a DUI checkpoint, then you can actually do, you know, cop blocking. You can actually prevent people from getting arrested, not just for being drunk, but, you know, just, I remember one time when they did a DUI checkpoint out in Walpole, New Hampshire, which is one of the towns in the very west border of Vermont. They did a DUI checkpoint out there. We had about a dozen liberty activists on the scene, so we covered the road, you know, in advance of where the checkpoint was on both sides, so both directions. We had sort of a team there and people with signs indicating that the checkpoint was ahead and that they could just simply turn away at this location and go around the checkpoint.
A person who is dangerously drunk is unlikely to sort of notice and care about a person on the side of the road telling them about a checkpoint.
But there was one person.
But these checkpoints are, best I can tell, unconstitutional. Certainly, they impede people's right to travel.
Yeah.
You know, who's this person? Why are they asking me questions? Do they have reasonable, articulable suspicion that I've committed a crime? If they haven't, why am I being stopped?
So
I don't think they're unconstitutional.
I was sharing that there was one car of some teenagers I was told about that stopped to talk to the sign holder, and like a cloud of marijuana smoke wafted out of the vehicle, and you know, it was a good thing they avoided the checkpoint, let's say, so they did turn off, and so we had probably the very least saved some people from getting arrested that night. There's more coming up here in moments. This is Free Talk Live.
Bitcoin.com is the most unique online destination in the Bitcoin universe. Buying Bitcoin? Do it here. Want to speak your mind to other Bitcoin users? Our forum is always open and censorship-free at forum.bitcoin.com. There's no bigger Bitcoin believers than the Bitcoin.com team. That's why this site is a one-stop shop for everything you need to get into Bitcoin life. You can also play games at games.bitcoin.com. Learn more at bitcoin.com. That's bitcoin.com.
Free Talk Live.
It's Free Talk Live, and we're launching into the second hour of the program. You can dial in toll-free and join us here. Bring up whatever's on your mind at 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. And with you in the studio, you've got Ian,
Jay,
and Mark.
So to bring you up to speed here in the last hour, besides taking your calls about anything you want to discuss, we also talked about what's happening in the streets of Venezuela. Now, for the last few weeks, there have been protests throughout Venezuela and Caracas and elsewhere, but today was supposed to be a big day when it came to, you know, a massive, massive protest. They call it the mother of all protests today. With tens of thousands in the streets in downtown Caracas. And one of those protesters, Liliana Machuca, who earns about $20 a month holding down two jobs teaching literature, says she doesn't expect change to come overnight. A lot of these protesters would like to get rid of the president of the country, the socialist hellhole, Venezuela. For those of you who haven't been following closely, the economy down there is in the crapper, and it's thanks to socialist policies like price controls and nationalizing industries is why that's the case. And as a result of the price controls, food is pretty much unavailable as far as through the typical channels. You have to buy through the black market, it seems like, if you want to actually get a, you know, have a chance of survival. So it's a pretty dire circumstance, and people are upset given that the government has postponed regional elections since last year. They currently aren't scheduled. The president's saying it'll be soon.
There was a recall on the president also, and he just decided, man, we're not going to do that.
Yeah, well, they've been dragging their feet as much as possible on that as well. So, Jay, you had wanted to talk about what are some other options, because this lady thinks that, you know, hitting the streets with a protest is all she can do. She wants to see change, but she doesn't know what else to do. And you've been reading a book recently that might have a few ideas.
Well, so I don't really read books too much, but I do a lot of driving, so I audiobooks.
Oh, you've got the audiobook
version. Okay. Yeah, so the book is Sedition, Subversion, and Sabotage, a three-part solution to the state. And this is a book by Ben Stone, a bad Quaker, and I have listened to the first two parts of it once, and I really, really enjoy it and really like it. And he does a excellent job laying things out in the book. You can download this for free at badquaker.com. I just went to the website and I'd seen it on there.
Or it's called Sedition what and Sabotage?
Sedition,
Subversion?
Subversion and Sabotage, a three-part solution to the state. And what he gets into is peaceful sedition, simple sabotage, and ethics-based selective irregular warfare. The last one, I haven't listened to that one yet, but I've listened to the first two parts. And peaceful sedition is something like civil disobedience, speaking the truth, agorism.
We've done a lot of that up here in New Hampshire.
Right, we've done a lot of that. And agorism is probably, I would imagine, is pretty popular right now in Venezuela at a black market. I think it would kind of have to be, because
agorism is the idea of just kind of doing business without government permission.
Right.
Yeah, and about two-thirds of the business in the world is done without government, business and taxes being taken and all that sort of thing.
Most people love the idea of keeping money off the books.
Yeah, I can't remember what they called it, but like the economy D or something like that. I can't remember. But if agorism was an answer in and of itself to anything besides not paying taxes on that transaction, it would have worked already, because two-thirds of the transactions in the world are agorist.
Agorism is just an element of what Ben Stone's talking about here in his book. So he gets into a three-part attack, basically, about, you know, above-ground activists, the underground activists, and just all these things you can do to basically, you know, work around the system. You can, you know, and he gets into things about making life miserable for government agents and like people who work in the government that are, you know, secret activists that they, you know, he talks about one example, like if you work for an airline, you can, you know, a government agent calls and whether he's going on business or he's government business or a personal thing, because he, you know, as a government agent, you could mess with his flights. So he misses his flights, especially if it's for, you know, business work.
Right.
People who work for crony corporations, you can mess with them. You know, the crony corporations are pretty much in bed with the government. One example he makes, he goes, oh, if there's a, you know, some kind of government agent going on business somewhere, you're in luggage at the airport, you should open up his luggage and put a set of, you know, a pair of girls' panties in the inside coat pocket of his suit jacket, you know, or something like, he doesn't say exactly like that, but, and it just gets into it. The book is really entertaining, but it makes a lot of sense. And if the people of Venezuela are going to have to really, you know, like do some strategy because they just can't fight. You know, they don't have any guns. They're not armed. Well, I guess these militia folks are armed, but maybe as part of this, you know, simple sabotage, they could be, oh yeah, you know, I want to be pro-government and part of the militia, and then they can get themselves guns and they could figure out where supplies are and they can, you know, they could almost stage like a counter militia. I mean, I almost think the best foreign aid that the people of Venezuela could get, the poor people of Venezuela, is literally guns and ammunition so they could defend themselves.
For sure.
Yeah, or take back their own country. I mean, I'm not pro-war, but, you know, the people in power aren't going to give it up until they're dead.
Or driven out. I mean, there certainly have been, president dictator types who have been run out on a rail and then, you know, they're not allowed to come back. That has happened.
So the people of Iraq had, every home had an AK-47 pretty much. It was very commonplace. They weren't having revolutions at that time. Also, if you look at, I think it's Guatemala, Tegucigalpa, you'll see that, they're armed to the teeth there. They're not overthrowing their government. Then again, their government's completely ineffectual. Nope, they're not.
And I don't think they were starving in Iraq either.
Nope.
But
they got crappy governments, but they're not starving.
And the government probably didn't mess with really anybody too much because they would, you know, it'd be like messing with a hornet's nest if everybody had an AK-47, I would imagine.
Yeah.
I don't know. I've never been to Iraq. I've never been to Venezuela. I really can't, you know, speak on a strategy, but Ben Stone's book, I'm sure, could be applied. It would be really awesome if it was in Spanish. So then folks down there could, or if there was a Spanish audiobook, I'm sure they must have a lot of the technology we have.
So it looks like he's got it in audiobook form as well as PDF, and he's even selling print copies of it. So
yep.
I got to say, this sounds a lot to me similar to 101 Things to Do to the Revolution by Claire Wolf. We actually talked about that many years ago here on Free Talk Live, and she has a lot of the same ideas of, you know, being, if you're working inside the system as like a government employee, doing things to sort of sabotage quietly from the inside without drawing attention to yourself, because you don't want to get removed from that position. And she also talks about some, you know, very similar concepts, maybe not quite as destructive, because like the actual sabotage of government equipment, for instance, I don't think she went that far, but this does sound like a really enlightening read. And so you can go to badquaker.com to either download the audiobook or PDF or purchase the print copy. Now, that does kind of bring up another interesting discussion, which is, and it's something we've talked about previously on this show, but it doesn't come up very often, which is the question of, is it ethical, is it a moral thing to do to destroy the equipment of the government? So to disable, let's say, police cars or something like that. Not, you know, hurting somebody who's inside the car.
Not blowing up a car while somebody's in it, but the question of whether it's ethical to destroy the equipment. And, you know, on one side you have, well, the equipment's being used in an aggressive form in many cases, so it's completely fair. On the other side, you have like, well, you know, they're just going to tax us.
They're going to raise taxes. They're going to buy more.
Buy another one. Why are you blowing up this one if you're going to, you know, do another? I tend to think that we're still in the realm of changing hearts and minds because, you know, to me, I think that there's an actual possibility of making all this happen here in New Hampshire. The idea of there being a more free society here than there is in the rest of the United States. Now, if you live in the rest of the United States, I can see your frustration. I get it.
Yep.
But
we need more people to come
make
here.
It free.
I mean, we still need thousands more liberty-minded people to come here to New Hampshire to have a real chance at making a serious impact. I mean, we're already making an impact. There's no doubt. There's libertarians who've been elected. They are working to change the system from the inside. There's people creating an outside the system network of like a community and marketplace and things like that. So there's stuff to do for anybody that loves freedom here in a variety of different venues. And it's great. And there's nothing like it anywhere else in the world because we already have thousands of liberty-minded people here. But we need thousands more to pick up their lives and start planning a move here. You can check out ShireSociety.com or move.ShireSociety.com. We're coming up. Free Talk Live. Dial toll-free. Join us here. Our number, 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. With you tonight, it's Ian.
Jay.
And Mark.
Also, do want to let you know about hope.freetalklive.com. Mark, what's the latest on this construction project in Uganda to help build an orphanage for, what, about 40-something kids?
Yeah, so there's about 40 kids in Jinja, Uganda. It's actually outside of Jinja. There's, you know, there's more orphans than that in the area. AIDS, war, these things have ravaged the area. There's so many orphans that communities really can't take care of them on their own, or they don't, at the very least. There is a young man, though, that I've been in contact with for more than 8 months who's been taking care of these particular 40 orphans, and I'm getting, you know, pictures and videos of them all the time. You can too. You just have to go to hope.freetalklive.com. You'll find out the story. You can, you know, there's all kinds of links there. You can follow them down. You can, you know, you can get in contact with the Funda, and you can donate. There's different ways to donate: Bitcoin, PayPal, Western Union, MoneyGram, a variety of ways to donate. But they need to build an orphanage. They've created 60,000 clay bricks to build the walls. I wanted, before I got involved, I wanted to make sure that they were dedicated and ready to make it happen. So I wanted to see the bricks done before I, you know, started talking about it on the radio. So with 60,000 bricks, I can see a huge amount of dedication to getting this building built. Now, they need a foundation. The foundation is going to cost a total of about $2,500. We need about $1,500 more. We've got a two-for-one sort of situation going. Cell 411 has offered to match dollar for dollar any donations that come in at this point.
And that's awesome.
If you would please go to hope.freetalklive.com, donate. If you're going to, you know, please let me know how you did, too. There's contact information for me there. If you want to send Bitcoin, I can, you know, I can facilitate that. Actually, the address is right there at hope.freetalklive.com. If you want to do PayPal, you can send it to me, and then I'll make sure I'll send Bitcoin over and make sure it gets to them. This is a, you know, very much a Bitcoin project, and we want to get that foundation started this week. We just need a little bit more money. So please, now's an opportunity to help poor kids that some of them don't have shoes, okay? We're not talking about kids that have much here. They had a big party, rice and fish. That was the party. You know, they handed out some used shoes that they got for $5 a piece. That's the party. I feel really awful for these kids, and I want to help them. Hope.freetalklive.com.
All right, you can join us here. Our toll-free number is 855-450-FREE. And I want to make a correction. I mentioned a Claire Wolfe book. We were talking about the new Bad Quaker book that you've been reading, Jay, which is called Sedition, Subversion, Sabotage, sounds like it would be awesome. I definitely want to check that out. And also, I mentioned it sounded familiar to Claire Wolfe's book, 101 Things to Do to the Revolution. I misidentified that book. That's not the one I've read. That's her older one. The one that I've read is The Freedom Outlaws Handbook, 179 Things to Do Till the Revolution, which she wrote, I believe, after her 101 Things to Do.
So I'll recommend that one to the people of Venezuela also.
Yeah, so that's why you brought this up originally, is we were discussing the protest movement out in Venezuela. They don't know what else to do. They want to get rid of this government. They want to get rid of the president there. They want to see serious changes. But so far, all they've got as far as a plan is to get out into the streets and let their frustrations be known. And frequently that will result in some further action, as we've seen with the Arab Spring, I believe is what it was, in Egypt. And I don't know what that
was. A little noise.
Stand by. Anyway, so that resulted in the overthrow of that particular government, and things got violent there for a short period of time. Some of the protesters were killed, and things got a little bit ugly. Now, that's not what anybody wants to see happen, but it does tend to be the way these things go.
I mean, simple sabotage, such as letting the air out of the tires of the, you know, police cars and the jeeps of whatever these, you know, militant militia, you know, people that are running around, that you're like these folks that shot these two kids. I mean, there's a lot of simple sabotage that could be taken against them, you know, siphoning the gas out of it. I mean, then you get yourself some gas. I'm sure they could use some gas, you know, letting the air out of the tires. I mean, you know, it's just going to be messing them up. They're not going to be able to, you know,
making life more difficult.
This book is about all kinds of little things like that you can do. The whole idea of the book is not hurt anybody, not kill anybody,
right?
But to just really screw their situations up so they can't rule the people. The idea.
So it takes people to rule, right? You can't do it on your own. Keene, New Hampshire, we have, you know, traffic and parking rules. Now, I'm of the opinion that roads are paid for by people and businesses. People and businesses should have the parking spaces that are on the road. And when you're talking about downtown, that businesses should control their own parking. That we don't need a bureaucracy to handle parking spaces downtown. That it is a terrible right. thing to do for a local restaurant to hand out tickets to their customers when I could go just down the street to another restaurant that has a parking lot and not get a ticket. So that drives customers away. Now, there was a group called the Robin Hooders here in town that would go around and plug parking meters and hold cameras on parking attendants if they got out of hand or whatever, and did a variety of things. Mostly they used their cameras for protection. But at one point or another...
And were very effective, by the way.
Yep, they were.
Saving thousands of people from getting tickets.
$40,000 in revenue on the bottom line was removed from the city's budget. Now, they were also effective in this way. There was a parking attendant guy who was a veteran, and he said that basically being a parking attendant was worse than being in Iraq. Now, this shows you this poor guy has some kind of PTSD, right?
Yeah.
He's messed up. But he quit. He quit being a parking attendant and went and worked elsewhere. And, I mean, now there's one fewer person handing out tickets through these systems. You got to ask yourself as a meter maid in Keene, New Hampshire, whether it's worth getting followed around or harassed or whatever it is they claim happens, because there's no evidence for it. Harass is a legal term having to do with threats, and none of that occurred. But and the Supreme Court has ruled on the side of the Robin Hooders again and again. But it doesn't make a difference. What makes a difference is that looks like that activism worked.
Yeah, there was an interesting headline that I saw on the social media today, and I don't know if I can quickly pull it back up, but it was a parking enforcer who had been rammed. I guess they have one of those little golf carts that they've repurposed into being a parking...
Cushman cart.
Yeah, a parking enforcement vehicle, and somebody who was angry about getting a ticket just decided to go right ahead and ram that lady, or guy, or whoever it was that was driving it. I don't think they... I don't think they were killed or anything like that, but just kind of made me think, and they think they have it tough in Keene, where people are just feeding the meters, basically?
About 15 years ago, my little sister was going to college up here at Keene State. I went out basically on a bar crawl with them, and I parked my car right basically in front of where local burger is now, and it was on the weekend, but I got a ticket on it because it stayed out there past a certain time. At night. I don't remember if after 2 a.m. or whatever, but I wasn't driving it. I had been drinking, and I just walked back to, the college and stayed in the dorm room. But, what am I supposed to do? What are you supposed to do when you're half drunk?
Exactly. You're screwed either way.
Yeah.
The toll-free number here is 855-450-FREE. We'll go to your calls and thoughts. You can take control of the airwaves. Plus, more about what's happening in the streets of Venezuela. Coming up, it's Free Talk Live.
A funny thing happens when you don't advertise. nothing. Modern advertisers have been trained to look for trackability in their advertising, and web search ads are great for that. They also help you get the consumer that's looking for products like yours in the moment. But they're expensive, and they do nothing to convince people to try your product segment in the first place. They help you get a bigger piece of the pie, but branding mediums like radio grow the pie itself. Free Talk Live's on more than 150 stations, and we can help advertisers with little budgets and big ones. Send me an email, mark@freetalklive.com. It's mark@freetalklive.com.
It is Free Talk Live, and you can dial toll-free and join us on the radio waves here. Our number is 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. Tonight, in studio, it's Ian.
Jay.
And Mark.
Also, I do want to let you know about Bitcoin.com. It's the most unique online destination in the Bitcoin universe. If you're buying Bitcoin, you can do that through Bitcoin.com. Maybe you want to speak your mind to other Bitcoin users without being censored? Well, you can do that at the forum at forum.bitcoin.com. There are no bigger Bitcoin believers than the Bitcoin.com team, and that's why Bitcoin.com is a one-stop shop for everything that you need to get into Bitcoin life. You can also play games at games.bitcoin.com and possibly win some Bitcoin. Learn more at Bitcoin.com. That's Bitcoin.com.
Is there censorship going on in a Bitcoin world or something?
Oh, yes.
That's what I've heard, yeah. There are some of the more popular Bitcoin forums, like the Bitcoin Reddit and the, was it, what's the Bitcoin?
Bitcoin Talk?
Yeah, that's the Bitcoin Reddit, r/Bitcoin. And then I think the Bitcoin Talk forums have been alleged to have been censoring as well. So that's why Roger Ver behind Bitcoin.com started his own forum a couple of years ago, because he wanted to have a place where people could talk without worry of being moderated, like they have been in other places.
I mean, what's the point of a forum if whatever you say is just going to be, you know,
removed? Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I used to be in like 15 or 20 forums from everything from, you know, Bitcoin, Liberty to like diesel truck stuff, and I don't know, I just kind of haven't paid attention much lately.
We're going to continue with your calls and thoughts. We got Dave. He's in California listening to KGOE in Eureka. Hey, Dave.
Hey. One of the things that's been troubling me, and I'm trying to reflect on, and we'd welcome your input.
Sure.
What can we do to make elected officials, government people, more honest, more answerable to the people? I think it's worse in the United States than anywhere else. I've been around a lot in different places, and I think
I'm sure it's not that bad.
Well, government and honesty is like an oxymoron.
Yeah, they don't go together.
So I think, I don't think there's anything you could do if them two elements have to be part of it. It's like, hey, if we blend oil and water, can you know, what can we do? You know, we'll just blend it faster and harder. You know, vote harder. So, but we have to eliminate, the only way it could be honest is if there was a true free market. There wasn't favoritism. There wasn't this protectionism involved. That you couldn't have, you know, what we have, you know, come accustomed to being government as we know it. To keep the honesty, I believe the free market would keep the honesty because, you know, it's just like with the welfare program. There's so many people on welfare that, you know, they're doing drugs or they're faking it or it is disability. But if it was charities that like we donated to, and we know that certain charities doesn't vet the people they're giving a charity to. They just pass it out.
You don't have to
donate
to
them. We're not
going to
give to that charity. And,
there have been some charities that have done some questionable things. And
sure.
They got outed. Like, wasn't it Bono's charity that was giving like 96% of the overhead to the people running the charity and like 3 or 4%
was
going to the actual recipients? I think I've heard that somewhere. But there are some bad news charities out there. But when the word gets out, the marketplace can punish them instantly by restricting their donations. Whereas when government does bad things, when government is dishonest, we are still all forced to pay for it over time. Go ahead, Mark.
I'm going to give this a shot, Dave. I had a chance to think about your question. I think it's a fair question. What can we do to make government officials more responsive and more honest to their constituents? So, it's a fair question, right? Like, if you know, let's see what we can do. A little thing, as opposed to, you know, blowing the whole thing up. And
well, yeah, I mean, I like where Jay's coming from, but what can we do now?
Right? What
like,
can we
free
do
market, great idea. Let's do that
today.
Yeah.
And the answer I would say is first off, you know, people, bad people, are going to be attracted to positions of power. If once there's a position of power, in all likelihood, you're going to find the people who are A, the best people running campaigns, and B, the people who believe they have the most to gain from being in the office. And, you know, the ones that are the best combination of those two things are the ones that are going to end up in the job. Now, I would say that the United States government is de facto the government of the world, that essentially the State Department, by hook or crook, through the carrot and the stick, manages to implement the things that are most important to it through the other governments of the world on the people that they rule. So you have the most powerful positions are in Washington, D.C., and surprise, surprise, some of the least desirable people are the ones that end up in those positions. I would say the problem is the power. That because the power is concentrated, that if we had states like California or New Hampshire or wherever would take back their constitutional and lawful rights away from Washington, D.C. and stop being dependent on the money they hand out, that you would see a modicum of accountability returned, because you have more say in the people in Sacramento than you do to the ones in Washington, D.C. What do you think about that answer, Dave?
Well, you know, I feel you're definitely onto something, but there are some aspects of this bureaucracy that work and work well. And I would cite Social Security. It has very low overhead, gets the checks out every month, and they operate well within their budget. If it wasn't for other officials sticking their hand in the box and helping themselves to it and then saying, well...
Right. If it wasn't for corrupt government officials, Social Security would be in better shape.
But Social Security itself is corrupt because it uses taxation to achieve its goals. So it's forcing people. Yes, it does. Every paycheck that every person receives has Social Security taken out of it, and that's money that's going to pay those other checks that you talked about them printing out. They don't actually have any money in storage for any period of time, or investments or whatever. They're just literally taking from one group of people, the younger people, the workers, and they're giving to an older group of people. And it's not fair, and it's not nice, and it's not a good way to, you know, to help people. It's getting some people a check, but there are more moral ways and more honest ways to do that.
It's worth pointing out, and Walter Williams did this, he's a black economist, he pointed out that Social Security favors rich white women over poor black men, because people who are black, people who are poor, and people who are male are less likely to live as long as people who are rich, white, and female. And so that you basically have three poor black men working to support every rich white woman on Social Security.
It was probably, maybe that was a coincidence, but it probably was also a bunch of rich white guys that made the Social Security program in the first place.
Didn't
I'm more paid into Social Security for an awful lot of years and a good deal more than I could expect to receive in return.
Didn't Bernie Madoff go to jail for doing a similar thing, taking from current investors and given to investors that put in years ago?
Yeah, it's called a Ponzi scheme.
Yeah, that's right.
I think Dave's correct that you could have created a mandatory retirement funding program like Social Security that would have worked pretty well. I mean, there's a lot of stories that out there of, like, the first person to receive Social Security was this woman who lived to be like 101. She paid in, I don't remember, 10 years or something like that, and got back some ridiculous amount more than she ever put in. It's a funny story, but you could have made a system that was sort of a mandatory retirement system that actually had its own account rather than going into the general fund and all these sorts of things. But the real problem is that it was created by politicians to benefit politicians, and the politicians have used it however they've wanted to. And now you have a situation where a shrinking working class is trying to support a growing retired class.
Well, be aware there is an awful lot of us now, well, in our senior years, that rely heavily on Social Security, if not exclusively.
Yeah.
As a means of surviving. And if that were taken away, what kind of...
Oh, I wouldn't suggest taking it away. I wouldn't do that.
Well, we on this show do suggest ending coercive taxation, Mark, and so the only way to not take away Social Security, it would be to have to sell off the government assets to shore up that fund for a time. Hey, thanks, Dave, for the call tonight. And again, accept voluntary contributions. I'm fine with that. It's Free Talk Live. Free Talk Live. Join us here. The toll-free number is 855-450-FREE. With you in studio, you've got me, Ian.
Jay.
And Mark.
And we can talk more about the people hitting the streets in major numbers down in Venezuela. We have yet to get to the part of the story about the government, pro-government militias that the president there is arming up. We'll tell you more about that on the way. You can, of course, take control of the airwaves and bring up whatever you want. We just had an interesting question from Dave in California asking about, you know, the corruption in government and what to do about that. Because it's obvious that government is corrupt. And, you know, the question is just to what extent is it corrupt? If you have power, as you were saying, Mark, people who are attracted to that power and likely because they want to wield it for not so nice purposes to benefit themselves or punish their enemies, those people are going to get into those seats. They are going to compete with one another to get into those seats. And that's why we have crappy choices like Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton for president.
And I'm not saying there's never been a good politician.
Ron Paul.
Well, I mean, you know, that's a preference for me. I'm sure that Dave would be more interested in Bernie Sanders, who I do think has a modicum of integrity. I don't think he's perfect, but then again, I'm not likely to think Bernie Sanders is perfect. You know, I don't intend to speak to that. What I'm saying is that what's the likelihood if you make a position of power that corrupt, easily corrupted
99.99%.
People. I don't know. I mean, you're just pulling a number out of your, yes, your out of the air and quoting it. But if the number is more than 50% likelihood that corrupt people will be attracted to seats of power, then what you have is a real problem for a representative democracy.
Well, there was 399 other people, what, besides Ron? Oh, no, 520. How many of them are there?
435 people in the House, 100 in the Senate, and one in the White House. Yeah. So 536 drunken sailors.
And there was only one Ron Paul, so that sounds really like more than 99%.
Just a insult to drunken sailors, frankly.
Yeah, so what I was going to suggest as far as how to increase honesty in within this system that we have, I like where you were going, Mark, with decentralization. I think that was sort of the kind of the theme of what you were saying.
And that's happening right now in California, where Dave is.
You mean with the Yes California campaign?
Well, not just the Yes California campaign.
For secession?
They're looking to secede. But California told the federal government to take a long walk off a short bridge in the mid-90s over medical marijuana. And
they're doing it again with sanctuary cities, too.
Yep, sanctuary cities. California is nullifying federal law on a regular basis. And as states continue to, and states are doing this all over America for a variety of different reasons, the federal government is grasp on the states, which has really been very, very good since the Civil War, the War of Northern Aggression, as I prefer to call it, from the South. Ever since then, they had a pretty good grasp. But that grasp is, you know, it's getting tenuous. Mm-hmm. They don't have the ability to use violence to keep us in check anymore. You can't, in the age of Facebook Live and YouTube, you can't drop a drone bomb on somebody's house. You can't send the stormtroopers in to hold down a neighborhood too long. It gets done, but it's just much more difficult than it was for them to use violence. They have to use the carrot far more often than the stick, and the carrot kind of runs out. The one big thing the federal government has is its creation of money, and because it creates money, states want that money. So if the reason that all the states have seatbelt laws isn't because they care about you flying out your front window. They don't. News to you, they don't. The reason they have these seatbelt laws is because the federal government gave them millions of dollars to accept it. Here in New Hampshire, they're still offering $3 million to the Department of Transportation to get rid of the seatbelt laws that we have, to make all adults have to wear seatbelts. And if they upped it to $30 million, I'll bet we'd have a seatbelt law in the next year because the politicians want the money. Yeah. So ultimately, all it ever comes down to, and this is a really difficult thing to tell somebody who wants to have a more to have a better government, they just don't quite understand it, is you've got to stop the government's ability to create money out of thin air.
Yeah, I think you've really come on to you've boiled the decentralized concept down into a few different areas. And when I heard you say there was money, you had talked about decentralizing politics as well, where the states have more control, maybe total state secession. That would help because, again, the state governments are a little more responsive than the federal government. You decentralize money away from state money, and you have things like Bitcoin, which is the perfect example of decentralized money that puts the power of money into the hands of the people, which is a huge paradigm shift. And I don't think we can emphasize enough how important of an idea that is, how major of a change that that is from the way money has always been throughout generations. The money has always been issued by governments and banks, these major centralized institutions. And now, within the last decade, we've had this creation of decentralized cryptocurrency. And it's a huge game changer for empowering the individual. And if you can take money out of the hands of the state, that is a major disempowerment to the state. Now, you know, Bitcoin hasn't supplanted the U.S. dollar yet, but it is becoming a real influence on the world stage. I heard that India this week has had a lot of Bitcoin sales shooting up because the state money there has been debased. The state money there has been screwed with recently when they, I don't know if you recall the story,
yeah,
that they had taken away certain notes from the India currency. And so obviously when the state is manipulating its money supply, people are going to start looking for other options. Historically, they've looked at gold, they've looked at silver and other things, and those are still great hedges against inflation. I would not say don't get those things. I'd say everybody should have a little bit of those. But also Bitcoin is much more accessible. It's easier to send. It's easier to receive. And it's cryptographically secure. So,
in the age of the internet, I can't take my ounce of silver. It's super inefficient to throw that thing in a, you know, envelope.
Oh yeah,
go to the post office and then send it to somebody and hope they got it. And,
right, hope the postal inspector didn't end up pocketing the thing.
These old timers I talk to, they're like Liberty, you know, movement old timers, like it's just more fiat money. And I try to explain
about Bitcoin.
Yeah, yeah. And I try to explain to them, well, it takes energy to produce it, so it's really not fiat.
Right, and it's also backed by the uniqueness of the Bitcoin network. That's this amazing settlement network, basically, that's got value too. The fact that exists.
So that's another thing I try to do is sell Bitcoin on people a lot. And these old timers, especially some of these old farmers, you know, they don't want to hear about it. But
no,
there is one farmer I do pay him in Bitcoin for hay.
Well, they'll either, you know, not come along and just have to stick with the old ways, or they'll see the value of it over time. And the other point of decentralization that I'd like to mention, and then we'll continue with your calls, is the media. So decentralized money, decentralized politics, decentralized the media. And we're starting to see that happen, too, over the last decade or so with the rise of the internet, the rise of the blog, the rise of YouTube and these other channels that you can put your content up there. Now, you might argue that, well, YouTube's a centralized entity, but there are competitors, right? So we have multiple options as far as, you know, Vimeo.
You pick, yes.
Whatever the other ones are, LiveLeak, different options for putting content out there and getting it out there for the masses. That, I think, is another important factor because what we've seen when media is centralized, they're much more likely to be beholden to the state. A centralized media is much less likely to ask tough questions of the state actors. They're much less likely to, you know, even investigate the stories that you and I might think are important or give them the due that we think that they should have. But if you have decentralized media, then anybody who wants to be the media can be the media. And that's a game changer as well. So I think the key to having that more honest government today is to move towards decentralization in these areas or in as many areas as we possibly can. So let's go to Daryl. He's in New Jersey. And Daryl, you're on Free Talk Live. Go ahead.
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Hey, what's on your mind?
So I was I talked to a lot of libertarians. I have a lot of libertarian friends, but frankly, I'm not a libertarian myself. One issue that we often kind of bounce around, and I get a lot of mixed responses on it, is a civil rights issue. For instance, this, I think this is a good example. It illustrates the point. let's say there was a golf course in the South.
There are golf courses in the South. So this is not, you're not making a big reach here. I know there are golf courses in the South. Go ahead.
I've seen them.
And it's an all-white golf course.
All right. I'm sure that there is one. Go ahead.
Right. That is no black people allowed.
Okay.
This is policy. This is policy of the golf course.
All right. Let's imagine.
Okay. Do you think that should be allowed? Right, they don't hire black people, and they don't allow black people to play.
Yes, let's talk about it here in moments.
A great question.
Daryl, stand by. We'll continue. What would it be called? Honky holes?
Honky holes. The cracker course.
All right, more
Peck
coming
it
up
in
here.
The woods.
Yeah, 855, 450 free. We got a whole hour to go. Plenty of time for you with your calls and thoughts. You can take control of the airwaves. Plus, if we get more chance, we'll talk about Venezuela and the protests in the streets. Big time. Coming up, Hour 3, Free Talk Live.
So the protection of life, liberty, and property is what the Free State Project is all about. But it's an effort to move 20,000 people who understand.
It's about demonstrating to the entire country
that, yeah, we can have a free market, a truly free market.
Making it just a freer, great place to live.
It's the world's largest voluntarist libertarian community, and it's only getting bigger.
That's amazing, to be able to move to a place where other people like passionately believe in being free and independent.
What the Free State Project is managing to do, though, is to put their money where their mouth is. Physically getting up across the country and saying, let's go someplace and let's demonstrate the power of these ideas. There's a lot of kind of philosophy that surrounds liberty. There's a lot of thinking about it and talking about it. But here in New Hampshire, people are doing it.
101 Reasons Liberty Lives in New Hampshire, a documentary by Free State Project Early Movers. Watch it free at 101reasonsfilm.com. 101reasonsfilm.com.
Free Talk Live.
Hey, it's Free Talk Live. We invite you to join us right here. Our toll-free number is 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. And Skype on in here. Join the show that way. Our Skype username is lrn.fm. With you in studio, it's Ian.
Jay.
And Mark.
We're going back to your calls and thoughts. Coming up, though, we got more about Venezuela, which is where we started the show tonight with the protests in the streets. Big numbers today. Today's sort of the culmination of weeks of protesting going on there in Venezuela. What's it all about, and what are the different sides? We can get into that a little bit further here. And let's go first, though, to Daryl, who called from New Jersey. Daryl, you said you're not a libertarian, but you've had discussions with some of your libertarian friends about the question of civil rights. You had brought up this sort of hypothetical golf course, which is, you say, an all-white golf course. Only white people are allowed to play there. And you asked the question, would we support something like that? Is that, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but is it basically where you were coming from?
Yeah, I mean, I guess the more important question is not, would you support the course, but I mean, it's really a matter of, I guess, would you support overturning the Civil Rights Act of 1964, which prevents that? I guess that's the real question.
Yeah, the short answer to that is yes. Now, let's look at the first you have to look
yes,
at...
Yes, we would overturn the act. No, we would not support the golf course.
Right. So, you know, look, don't forget the government forced businesses prior to 1964 to segregate, right? Like they
That's right,
they made it so that it would be very difficult for you to open a golf course and allow black people to play.
As an though, integrated golf
Yeah, course. An integrated golf course, if that's what you wanted to do. And so not only are we saying that we – not only are you saying when you take the side of the state in this circumstance, you kind of have to take – all of the responsibility of the state, which is that before it got enlightened and decided to be fair, it was darned unenlightened and not fair. So the question can also be turned around and say, hey, do you think that, you know, maybe there's a business out there that's run by a black person because, you know, we're looking at, you know, United States history, and clearly blacks have been on the losing end for some decades in the past. You know, do you think that a black business should be able to say, look, my people have been harmed by whites over and over and over. I don't want to let them in my business. Would you support them being able to do that?
No, I think it goes both ways.
Okay.
I mean, obviously.
Now, I do support their ability to do that. I think it's completely fair that if you want to keep people out of your business for whatever reason you want to do it, that's mm-hmm. your business. Now, here, there mm-hmm. actually is a story out of the New Yorker that I had in show prep here about a barbecue place called... I can't even find the name of it right now, but it was a popular South Carolina barbecue restaurant, was owned by a white supremacist, and now he's dead. And his kids are running it, and they're like, hey, look, we don't want anything to do with that, that what dad did and that sort of thing. What all we care about is serving good food. Mm. And there's good liberals from New Jersey who are wringing their hands about whether or not it's moral and appropriate to now go to the barbecued restaurant that was at one time tainted
really?
By the white supremacist. You know, in the same way that you have Jews that say, I won't drive a Mercedes because Mercedes supported Hitler. Of course, if they hadn't, they'd have gone to a gas chamber too. But regardless, there's all these complaints back and forth. It's very muddy water. But really what it comes down to is I think that the marketplace can handle this issue. I'm not claiming that libertarianism would have worked in 1940 or whatever. I'm claiming that at this point, we are at the point where we can have freedom. Everybody of every race can have freedom and it will work. Because the reason I'm not claiming that it would have worked in the past is I frankly don't know. I don't have enough historical knowledge and I don't want to get into a debate about happened.
The principles of freedom work regardless of what time frame it is. These are principles that have been around for a long time.
I think they work better in a world with better communication.
No doubt.
And we've got really excellent communication at this point. And
right. I would personally like to know.
I want to finish my point because this is really important. When, and I'm going to make essentially the same point that you are, but I think that it's worth sort of drawing it out, is ultimately, now with all this extra communication that we have going on, businesses operate on relatively small margins.
Especially
right?
restaurants.
If they're in competition, there's some other golf course out there that isn't going to be all exclusively one color, and they're going to get the business of people like you and me, Daryl, who think it's reprehensible, mm-hmm. who that they would operate in such a fashion. Now,
I take your point, and it's a good one. Your point is that we are at a point where we can get rid of those civil rights protections and that things
would
be okay.
But are they protections?
I'm just not sure that that's the case yet.
But the right to associate is a civil right, isn't it?
The right to associate?
Yes. Is it not a right? The right to with whom you associate is a right, isn't it? Okay. And look, if you tell a business that they have to hire people of all different colors or whatever, all you're doing is mandating mm-hmm. that they lie. Right? So if you go into a...
that doesn't magically make the owner not a racist.
Right, it doesn't.
You can make it whatever you want. And there's dangers in that as well. I think, people like Jordan Peterson are really good at laying out, how those things can go awry like they are in Canada right now.
I'm not familiar with that person.
He's a really interesting guy. He's a psychologist, but he talks a lot about gender roles and the how crazy the far left have gotten. And this is coming from a leftist. I mean, these people are just out of control. But he does a really good job of
what good is it? What good is it to force a bigoted or racist business owner into hiding with their beliefs? In my opinion, it would be better if they were free to put up, some no darkies sign on the front door. That way I know where I don't want to take my business.
For the sake of libertarians, however, I would then pose this question. Do you think that it is worth capitulating slightly and coming to the center on not overturning civil rights in order to have a chance of running for presidency?
Well, okay, so you're asking people who believe that the presidency is by its very nature a role of force and violence, that every president who is...
Wouldn't that make you more of an anarchist than a libertarian?
I don't believe the term anarchist is a proper term to describe anyone. An means no rule. An means no, and archist would mean rulers. So a person with no rulers would lie on the floor with no ability to move because they would not be able to rule themselves. A person would be an auto anarchist, if you one wishes to use that term. I prefer to use the term voluntarist because I believe in voluntary interactions. I don't want to do anything to your government. You can have any government you want. What's that? What's that?
We can settle involuntarily.
Right. Well, I think that it's important to make a distinction. Anarchist says, I want to blow up Washington, D.C. and slay them all, right? I don't care.
Mark that one for
you can have them all. They're all yours. All the rulers you want. Pile them up and have them vote on whatever you want them to do. All I'm saying is that they shouldn't be able to tell me and mine how we have to live just because they've got a preference. I don't want to be ruled by your liars and thieves. That's what makes me a voluntarist.
No, I understand. Yep. You certainly have conviction, but, I mean, we do have presidents and they do run the
country. Exist. Yes.
So I'm...
They don't run the country.
Hypothetically, you would want... Well,
presidents don't run the country. They're just the president of the government. They're just the head gang member. They're not running the country. There's no running America.
You would have wanted Gary Johnson to win the presidency.
No, I did not want Gary Johnson to win anything. I did not support Gary Johnson.
I did.
Oh, I'm sorry. I don't mean to mischaracterize your views. I apologize.
Yeah, because Gary Johnson wasn't a libertarian. He was running as a libertarian.
I thought he was the best option, would have killed the fewest amount of Arab children, so I went ahead and leveled my vote for him, sure.
So, Daryl, thanks for the call tonight. Your question, though, was...
Daryl, please call back.
Yeah,
we want to hear more of these questions.
Good discussion. But his question was, would compromising on the question of civil rights have helped a libertarian campaign? And we can continue. Talk Live. Dial toll free. Join us right here. Our number 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. And Skype on in here. Bring up whatever's on your mind. Skype username is lrn.fm.
I don't think anybody here is going to argue that healthcare is really pretty messed up right now in the country. It gives you money for being sick, but nothing for being healthy. So that incentivizes, ultimately, sickness. Wouldn't you prefer a healthcare company that incentivizes wellness over sickness? Well, there is a free market healthcare company that can give you freedom from health insurance. HealthExcellenceSelect.com. They give you a proactive, you can get a proactive healthcare assessment daily, no charge, 24-hour access to doctors on the phone, HIPAA's messed up medical records. Well, how about a medical information card that you can give to EMS, first responders, the emergency room, or whatever medical professional you want? You can check them out right now, healthexcellenceselect.com. The prices are great. It's lower than $600 for a family, full coverage. Coverage isn't the right term. I'm sorry. That's a legal term. You can protect your family for less than $600 a month. It's a health sharing organization. It isn't health insurance. So any kind of doctor, traditional, integrative, chiropractic, acupuncture, massage, you'll love the service and the price. HealthExcellenceSelect.com. That's HealthExcellenceSelect.com.
Toll-free number, 855-450-FREE. Let's continue here. Actually, I want to address the question that we had from our last caller, and then we'll continue with your calls. I think it was Daniel who was on the line with us, and he was talking about libertarians. He's not one. Had some questions about civil rights and the Civil Rights Act. Should it be repealed? And, of course, the libertarian answer is yes, it should be, but that doesn't mean that we favor racists, right? So the idea is... let's let business owners make decisions for themselves as far as how they want to run their business, and let's let the market decide whether or not those business owners should be punished. So if a business owner is bigoted or racist and the word gets out, that, hey, this person mistreats their employees. This person won't, you know, isn't treating black people right when they come in. This person's generally awful towards gays, or whatever it is that their personal issue is. You put the word out there. You get the word out in the streets via different social media, Yelp, other methods, publishing news articles, spreading the word.
And the the Civil Rights Act literally protects these bigots because it just made the government makes it illegal, or makes the government put them out of business. So it literally protects them.
Because they have to keep quiet,
because they have to keep quiet, and they know they have to keep quiet, and they're like, you know, they're worried. I mean, I've actually done some work, subcontract work for an outfit, and they were literally like, well, they were definitely racist big time, these mm-hmm. guys. And they would literally not hire, certain folks except for they needed them for federal contracts. Federal jobs, and that's another thing. What do they call that? Affirmative action. And
so they'd hire them because they had to, but then probably make their lives a little bit difficult.
Oh yeah,
right?
Like some of these guys were definitely like borderline abused. I mean, I guess is the best way I could explain it.
Why would somebody want to work for someone who doesn't like them? That has never made any sense to me. And why would you not want to know which business owners are the racists and the scumbags? You'd want to know those things. And having a free market would allow us to better spread that information. So he then asked the question, should the libertarians, let's say the libertarian presidential candidate, compromise on the issue of civil rights in order to try to get more votes? Was essentially the last question that he asked us there. And I say absolutely not. The whole point of being a libertarian candidate is not to pander to votes. And this is lost on the current Libertarian Party, by the way, which is why they keep selecting people like Gary Johnson and Bob Barr as their presidential candidates, because they are trying to compromise the message in order to get more votes. And you could argue that it worked in 2016. They got more votes in their presidential contest in 2016 than other years. But I think that also happened to coincide with a massive frustration that the average American had for the big two political parties. So I think that even if you had a libertarian candidate, let's say, another Harry Brown, somebody who was actually principled, he was their 2000 and 1996 candidate, he actually had a principled message out there, it could have done better, or at the very least, it would have been on par, because I think a lot of people voted libertarian not because they liked Gary Johnson, not because they thought his message was, good or made sense, but simply because he wasn't as objectionable as a person as Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. I think that's where the big vote numbers came from.
I tend to agree.
For the libertarians. And so, no, libertarians should not be watering down the message. They should not be compromising on issues. The whole point of a libertarian presidential campaign, or any libertarian campaign, in my mind, is to spread the ideas of liberty. And those ideas are based on a principle of non-aggression, which says that it's not okay to utilize the threat of or actual force to achieve political or social goals. It's just not okay to do that to your neighbors. And that's why that the libertarians need to stay on that point. They need to stay principled every issue and every time, because otherwise things get confusing. Otherwise, if you've got a libertarian candidate talking about a principled libertarian stance on some things, but then they are compromised on some issue like, let's say, civil rights, then people start to get confused, like, well, what does it mean to be a libertarian? Wait, are you in favor of war or are you against war? Are you in favor of civil rights or are you against civil rights? They start asking more questions and it gets confusing. People got Ron Paul when he ran for president. They would say things like, I don't agree necessarily with what Ron Paul says, but at least you know what he's going to say. At least you know he's going to tell you what he really believes, and you can actually figure out what he's going to tell you before he even says it, because it's based on the principles of liberty.
Yeah,
and people
consistent.
Got that. It got through to people.
If you looked at his interviews and speeches and stuff in like the 80s, there's like a 1988 Morton Downey Jr. Show.
I saw that.
And when he was really young, too.
Yeah, he was really young. I remember,
he had color in his hair.
I remember watching it with some girls who were like, wow, he looks so good.
I can't wait until people say that about me. Oh, yeah, remember when Mark had brown hair?
but he was like staunch on his, ending the war on drugs, and he's like, heroin should be illegal. I mean, should be legalized, and everybody's booing him in the crowd.
Which he got applauded for that same statement on the stage in the Republican debates.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And Morton Downey Jr. was like, that's terrible. People are going to be, kids are going to be doing drugs and everything. And he's like, And he's like, are you going to do drugs and they, be, you know, heroin, it becomes legal? And everybody's like, no. But yeah, so he's like the only politician I have ever recognized that was actually principled.
Right. And he stuck with it, even though he had a whole crowd of people booing him in 1988 or whenever that was. You know, 30 years ago.
That was the purpose of the Morton Downey Jr. show, is basically Jerry Springer before Jerry Springer.
Okay, but my point is, even though he had a whole crowd of people booing him, he didn't just change his position because he thought it was going to get him, you know, people going to like him. Oh, well, maybe I should just, you know, not talk about legalizing drugs. Well, no, he continued to talk about legalizing drugs to the point where a Republican crowd at a Republican primary debate gave him huge applause when he used the same statement on stage there, that heroin should be legalized. I didn't expect to see that kind of reaction from a crowd of Republicans. Now, obviously, his supporters were in the crowd, but it was a huge reaction from that crowd, and it was amazing. It was an amazing moment in that particular campaign. So, principles matter. Libertarians, if they're worth their salt, they ought to stick to them, because that's what we're trying to teach people, is that ultimate principle of non-aggression. There's more coming up here. This is Free Talk Live. You can join us here and take control of the airwaves. Ross Ulbricht was convicted in early 2015 of running the infamous Silk Road Underground Market. The Silk Road was a gift to humanity and helped reduce the harms brought on by drug prohibition. For this good deed, Ross has been sentenced to life in prison with no possibility of parole. Now, an appeal is Ross's only chance, and he needs your support. Please visit FreeRoss.org, where you can contribute via various methods, including Bitcoin. Visit FreeRoss.org. That's FreeRoss.org. Free Talk Live. Dial in toll free and bring up anything that you want. Our number here is 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. And joining you tonight, it's Ian,
Jay,
and Mark.
We've got Skype. You can Skype in here at username lrn.fm. Let's go back to the phones and to the fun. Eric is in Vegas. You're on Free Talk Live. Go ahead, Eric. Hello? Eric in Vegas. Eric in Vegas going once. Eric in Vegas going twice. We're going to put Eric back on hold. Maybe he's in a bad cell. Let's go, meanwhile, to Ricky in Pennsylvania. You're on Free Talk Live on Skype. Go ahead, Ricky.
That would be the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania there, Brother Ian.
Okay.
All right.
What's the difference between a Commonwealth?
Oh, don't ask him that.
No story for another day, yeah. Brothers. No, I was sitting here, and I sit every day here, and I watch the TV, and I watch the news, and I listen to all this stuff. A couple points I'd like to make, if I may.
What do you do for a living?
What do I do for a living?
Hey, just sit around and watch TV all day?
He can't talk about it, remember?
No, that's not quite true. What was that, brother?
I remember one time somebody asked you what you do for a living, and you're like, well, I really can't explain it, and I'm a, you know, contractor of some sorts, I think you said. I don't remember what you said, but
you
were very vague about it.
Jay. I don't know who you exactly be thinking about. I was not myself.
That's all right,
well,
go ahead.
Story. That's a long story. At this point, I'm not going to talk about
Fair enough.
That. Now, here's my issues.
All right, okay, go ahead.
A couple points.
Just one issue. One point.
Oh, it's all the same point. It's right, Donald Trump, the jackass.
All right.
Okay, here's my problems here. I got serious issues. Point number one. The F-18s, the F-35s, the submarines, the MOABs, the ICBMs, the aircraft carriers. See, it comes down to this. They don't belong to him. They belong to us. Problem number two.
No, they don't.
They really don't. I mean, you know, like, that's what we're told, but they don't.
You go try walking on a military base and say, hey, that's my plane over there. I'll be taking it for a ride. See how
that goes. That's not my point. That's not my point. Now, further, my point.
Ownership and control are linked. If you have no control, you truly don't have ownership.
Nope.
Well, it's the attitude, and that's what I'm getting at.
Yeah, okay.
Now, then you got these tax returns. Now, a lot of people mumbling about that. My answer on this is release them, because the fact of the matter is, the only reason why they wouldn't release them is for one thing. What's looking more and more apparent every day. Every day with, let's see, his daughter as an example. That right there is a serious problem.
What is?
You know, what's that have to do with tax
it's
returns?
A serious
what?
Problem.
Wait, what's it's a serious problem? What? His daughter is a serious problem?
She has a position as a undescribed, quote, advisor to the president.
Yep.
She cannot hold these holdings. And then these damn
hold
weekends.
What holdings?
Oh, you can't
yes,
have
she
weekends
can.
Off.
Well, no, no. Huh? Hold on. Advisors to the president don't have any legal obligation to not have, positions of power within companies. That's just not the case. Okay, so the tax returns. Let's address that for a second here.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, I think it's really important. The tax returns
not.
Are basically the birth certificate for the Democrats. Okay, it is a rabbit hole. To wait, have you waste your time? You've taken time on a nationally syndicated radio program when you could have talked about anything to talk about the tax returns because it's important to you. And the reason it's important to you
is
because somebody has told you that it is important, right? Like you're.
That's not it. No,
yes,
that's
it
not
is.
It.
You're parroting talking points because there's a Democrat media out there, and there was a Republican media saying, "Show us the birth certificate." I mean, right?
It's just as dumb.
And now, then Obama released something that kind of looked like a birth certificate, but wasn't really a birth certificate, or at least wasn't what I've seen as a birth certificate. My birth certificate's this old kind of copied thing with like a footprint on it and a weird stamp.
That's funny coming from a French sympathizer.
What the hell is a French sympathizer?
Didn't you see that yourself at a point a couple months back on the show? I remember hearing you
I am
say
a,
that.
I am
back.
A French sympathizer? I wasn't on the
you
show a couple of months ago.
No, didn't say that.
I tend to be a little more American and kind of like, oh, the French. But I think that they deserve is any deference that anybody
that
gives
them.
What does my stance on the French have to do with anything? Come on. Let's.
Because you sound like a Democratic Republican every time I hear you talk.
What does that mean?
You really do.
I don't know what a Democratic Republican is. Were you talking about Thomas Jefferson's party?
Absolutely.
Okay. So what I'm trying to say is that the birth certificate, I don't care where Obama was born. I tend to think he was born in Hawaii, but he
if
never
he
released
tax
wait,
returns,
wait. He never released
the Russians the rest.
If you can't learn from history, Ricky, you can't learn.
Thanks, Ricky.
Let's look at recent history on this. Obama never released anything that looked like a real birth certificate to me.
And you know what? He made it through 8 years.
Yeah, he made it through 8 years. And a whole bunch of people wasted a whole bunch of time chasing down the birth certificate
Paul
trail.
And talk radio,
calories
making
and time
blog posts,
and life.
Ridiculous.
Chasing this stuff down.
And you know what? Donald Trump's going to get through 4 years if he doesn't release the tax returns too.
Yeah.
And Obama and Trump, just like Obama, will listen to his handlers. He will listen to the people
right.
who are in charge of him. And, you know, they're going to run smokescreen. They're going to run distraction. And a really good distraction is not releasing
right.
these tax just
Look,
like you guys are saying. Right.
The fact is people are upset about this, and they're not upset about him bombing little children.
Right.
In
Democrats are upset
yeah.
that were upset before. Donald Trump is not going to gain one solitary electoral vote by releasing his tax returns. Releasing his tax returns is... Let's say it all, stupid, okay? From a political standpoint, he wants you wasting your time on the tax returns, people.
Right.
Waste your time all you want, but just understand you're doing what they want you to do.
Let's talk to Eric. I think he's actually there this time in Vegas. We're going to try him a second time. Eric, are you with us?
I am. Can you hear me?
Yes, we have you now. Go ahead.
Fabulous. Mark, I have a question for you.
Yes, sir.
There's a bill before
Careful,
the Nevada
I'm a French sympathizer.
it's about solitary confinement. And
okay.
you know, I don't know a lot about the issue, but I bet you do a whole lot more than I do. And I just wanted to hear your thoughts, because there's a bill in Nevada about restricting the use of it, especially on children.
People under the age of 18?
I don't know how far I want to restrict it, because... it could be the safety of the other prisoners or the prison staff if
sure.
someone's really angry and mentally ill. I just want to hear your thoughts about solitary confinement and how it is most properly used.
Yeah. So first off, people need to understand I spent 8.5 years in prison. I was never in solitary.
And every 3 in solitary.
I was never in solitary confinement, but I was in confinement.
What's the difference?
I had a roommate.
But y'all were in there 23 hours?
We were in there 24. We
24.
Weren't let out at all.
Oh, wow.
We got one shower in 4 days.
Okay.
Was the only time I got out at all. And,
wow.
we tore up milk cartons and made playing cards and, you know, read a Bible. And what else did you have to do? There was nothing else to do. Push-ups, you know, that's pretty much it. And now what I would say regarding – but I have read about solitary confinement, and I, you know, have as good of understanding as most on it, and, you know, have some credence when talking about it. So I think it's worth talking about. Solitary confinement is used in many cases in the United States as a form of torture, right? Like, imagine being a prison guard and having to deal with society's worst individuals. I am not a fan of convicts, but having to deal with these worst, the worst individuals that society has to offer, and, you know, you can't beat them on a regular basis, although sometimes you do, and, you know, your tools are limited, you tend to get jaded relatively quickly. And once you're jaded, then you're not treating people like humans anymore. And that's the real difficulty here. When it comes to solitary confinement, yeah, it's being used and abused on some occasions. There's other occasions when, I mean, if somebody's just incredibly violent, imagine being put in a room with a 350-pound insane man because they have to put him in confinement, but they can't put him by himself, so they put him in with you. You know, that's not
bad.
That doesn't sound good. So solitary confinement has to be used for a custody, care, and control situation. It's just that sometimes it gets abused. I don't have a real answer, but I'd be interested in knowing what the circumstances are they're trying to limit in Nevada.
855-450-FREE. It's Free Talk Live. Yeah, it's Free Talk Live, and moments remain here, but there's enough time for you if you want to join us right now. You can do that toll-free, 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733, and Skype on in here at username lrn.fm. With you tonight, it's Ian.
Jay.
And Mark.
Let's go back to your phone calls and thoughts. We do have Eric still on the line with us in Vegas. He says there's a possibility of some solitary confinement reform there in Nevada. And Mark, you had asked a question right at the end of the last segment about you were curious as to exactly what it was that they were proposing to do. Do you happen to know, Eric, what the proposal on the table is?
I haven't read the bill yet. It's very long and pretty confusing, too. It talks a lot about children. But what I got from Mark, and I thought his answer was really good, was essentially don't use solitary confinement for torture. Use it for safety. That sounds
it's a
like a really good answer
line
to me.
Whether it's an
adult or a child or mentally ill or not, just safety of the other prisoners, safety of the staff. That sounds like a very reasonable position.
It's a reasonable position, but the problem is that the way the prison system is staffed and run, it's really difficult. Look, I have a great deal of empathy for prison guards. I worked with them for years. I was the staff canteen operator. I served these guys coffee and snacks and sandwiches and these sorts of things. They were good to me. In some occasions they'd slap handcuffs on me and bang me against the wall just for fun. But, you know, that doesn't change the fact that I really like them. I'm really kidding, but that happened. So, the problem is that it's difficult to have that job and keep a perspective that is humane. It's really, really hard. Not because there's pressures from above. There's pressures from below. The people you're dealing with as far as the convicts go are society's worst. The people you're dealing with as far as prison guards are generally unloved by society. There isn't a single movie where a prison guard is portrayed as the hero. There are ones where they're the protagonist, the Green Mile. The prison guard is the protagonist, but there's none where they're the hero. The convict is always the hero. And these kind of things. I mean, this is societal and endemic, and it you can see what it does to these people over time, and it makes them brutal, and that's it's just tough to be humane in that environment as an officer.
And the tricky thing is, once again, you know, those positions of power, as we discussed earlier, not just positions of power in politics, but positions of power in bureaucracy will attract the corrupted, will attract the violent, especially as a prison guard. And it's very hard to weed those suspects out, especially if the person who's running the prison is a power-mad psychopath. He's likely going to have all kinds of baddies underneath him. And so then you'll have a situation where those guys are saying, well, okay, now there's these new rules. You can only use solitary confinement for isolation due to a danger instead of isolation due to punishment. And they'll just start to classify people who they want to isolate as a danger. Oh, well, you know, we're not trying to punish this prisoner. He is a danger to the other prisoners, so he's got to be moved away, even if they are actually using it for punishment. And then how do you prove it?
Now, this legislation that he was kind of reciting a little bit sounds to me like, could this apply to, you know, he's talking about the solitary confinement of, you know, people under 18. I did a little solitary confinement as a kid. I was grounded to my room when I did some bad things. I mean, are they going to spin this so Childhood Protective Services could, you know, throw this into their arsenal of reasons to, you know, snatch up kids or whatever? I mean, that's just kind of what I'm seeing here is what he was reading.
I would think that you could probably limit solitary confinement to same things like, you know, maybe 7 days tops. Mm-hmm. And then you don't have situations where a man's alone in a room with, you know, no one to talk to for 180 months. Days and stuff like that. The problem is that they've got things like out in California, they have this thing called the SHU, a special something.
Special housing units.
Yeah, special housing unit, where people are essentially
or segregated.
They're put in cells, but the cells have their gates, their fencing, and so they're right next to somebody else. But the worst they can do is, like, you know, do little finger grabby games at each other or whatever, right? Through the chicken wire. I guess it's thicker than chicken wire. Hurricane wire, is that what that regular fencing is called?
I have no idea.
I call it livestock fencing.
Okay, I thought livestock fencing was like the 4-inch squares. Anyways, I'm going to call it hurricane fencing. And there's not much. I mean, they're not solitary in that sense. They have people to talk to. It's just that they can't go anywhere
and kill the other person.
So I don't know.
Yeah, there are solutions for anybody that really wants to put some thought into this. And it's nice to see some state legislatures considering some changes. Eric, was there more you wanted to comment on about that? Go ahead.
You know, really, I just wanted to say I'm a poker dealer here in Nevada in a major strip casino. If I ever win $1 million at Megabucks, you can be sure you'll see me out there in New Hampshire. I'm going to join you guys. But until then, I kind of do the New Hampshire thing here in Nevada. I read these bills. I try to, you know, let my representatives know whether I've supported or I'm against it. I was really on the fence on this one. And that's it, you know. And as far as the prison guards go, you know, I think it's kind of like that Stanford experiment where even-tempered guy over time will tend to become sadistic because that role has that corrosive effect on his temperament.
I've witnessed that attitude on these big commercial farming operations. You see these, you know, 5,000-6,000 head dairies like they had in Colorado, and you know, over time the guys, like, they literally got guys just starting getting nasty with the cows because, you know, they're just, you know, having to, like, you know, their boss is like, you got 6,000 cows, I got to get milk three times a day, you know, and if the cows don't start cooperating, they get a little nasty with them. I've noticed that in big operations.
Slaughterhouses, it tends to be that way.
Yeah, same thing. Yep.
Yeah, the same sort of thing. I went to a slaughterhouse. The last time I went was a couple of years ago to take, I think it was two of my pigs, or I can't remember what the number was. Anyway, I took them in, and the two guys that normally get the pigs off the trailer are just kind of sitting there on the fence watching me as I get my pigs off off my trailer. I'm like, come on, guys, come on, let's go, let's go, come on, everybody, come on, it's going to be fun, let's go. And, you know, and I move them out slowly by cajoling them and talking to them and tossing a donut here or there. And whereas these guys are used to going in with axe handles and beating the animals out of the trailer. And this is at what they call a humane slaughterhouse. So now these guys chuckled, but I got the job done, and there was nobody behind me, so nobody had to wait or anything like that. They chuckled, but I got the job done, and they understood not to treat my animals that way while I was there. But that's why I stopped going to slaughterhouses generally, because, you know, I mean, They kill animals, right?
Eric, thanks for your call tonight. Appreciate the discussion. To bring it back real fast to the latest from Venezuela, with tens of thousands in the streets protesting against the status quo there. The president, Nicolas Maduro, has signed orders on television as of last week, activating the green phase of an enigmatic military plan to defend Venezuela against what he describes as a U.S.-backed attempt to sow chaos and overthrow him. He also said authorities in recent hours had rounded up unnamed numbers of an underground cell of conspirators at Caracas hotels, including some who are allegedly planning to stir up violence at the march, which so far the violence has been on the part of Maduro's people who've been shooting the protesters, allegedly. Maduro didn't provide any evidence to back his claim that a coup attempt was underway, and the opposition rejected his comments as a desperate measure to intimidate Venezuelans from exercising their constitutional right to free speech. The opposition said in a statement Tuesday, quote, "We're convinced the country knows who the true coup mongers are, and it's against them that we will march." Maduro this week said he was dramatically expanding civilian militias, which were created by his predecessor, Hugo Chavez, and giving each member of those civilian militias a gun. There are also criticism that the government isn't doing enough to restrain those collectives, motorcycle driving militants that have operated like shock troops, firing on protesters as security forces stand by. And indeed, the two deaths today in Venezuela were ostensibly caused by these pro-government militias that are now being armed. Every man in these militias being given a gun by the government. Energy Minister Luis.
I bet they'd rather have a sandwich.
Yeah. U.S. State Department
said, if you've got a gun, you can take your own sandwich.
They said those who commit human rights abuses and undermine Venezuela's democratic institutions should be held accountable. So that's what's happening in the streets in Venezuela. Things are definitely escalating, I would say. You've got tens of thousands of protesters and now newly, freshly armed citizen militias who are supposed to be defending the state. And if they're likely going to, if it's anything like what's happening in the Philippines, if they kill people down in cold blood, they could just get pardoned by El Presidente. We'll continue tomorrow. You can join us online in the meantime over at freetalklive.com. On Free Talk Live, we're bringing people to the ideas of liberty every day. From wrestling superstars like Glenn Jacobs.
You guys really are having an impact, I believe. Like I said, a lot of where I am now is due to listening to Free Talk Live. You changed my mind on some very important issues years ago.
To random people tuning in on the radio.
I was kind of stuck in the left-right paradigm. I heard your show by chance on a Saturday night. From there, I went on to join the Free State Project and become an amplifier. So, I mean, that's really the reason why I amp is because I know that if it wasn't for you guys being on as many stations as you are, I never would have found the ideas of liberty.
Your amp will directly change more lives by getting Free Talk Live in front of people looking for talk radio online and on the air. You can help by joining the AMP program for just $5 a month at amp.freetalklive.com and getting perks. That's amp.freetalklive.com.